We're talking with Tom Dongo about the new version of his book, Merging Dimensions. It's been updated, a lot of new photos added. If you try to buy it on Amazon, I guess Amazon will say it's not yet available. So there is a link, lighttechnology.com. And if you order a book there, it's 35% off in connection with Tom's appearance on the show. So lighttechnology.com. The name of the book is Merging Dimensions. And when we come back, we jump into some of these amazing photos. Pretty spooky, pretty weird stuff. And even weirder, or maybe it's not so weird, are the encounters that Tom and a lot of other people have had with these guys, these ninja guys with machine guns, military folks, who don't like people out there snooping around. We're going to hear those stories and more right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Dongo, in addition to the weird stuff that happened in and around the ranch, you had multiple encounters. You and others had multiple encounters with these men in black types, these military guys who were reluctant to say who they worked for, reluctant to show ID, but were very, very insistent that people needed to get out of there. Who are they?
Well, you know, I have friends that are high-ranking colonels that I can talk to, and one in particular that I go to, and he's had experiences out there himself with me with UFOs. Maybe sometime I'll get to tell a couple of stories that he and I were on, the incidents that we had. Those guys with the machine guns weren't dressed in black. They had current military uniforms, because I described these uniforms to my military friends, and they say, "Oh yeah, those are current military uniforms," but none of them had insignia on them. No insignia whatsoever. Because I interviewed some of the people that had these guns stuck in their nose encounters, and they described their uniforms pretty good. And in one case, in Secret Canyon, these guys were dressed in orange. So my friend in the military, I said, you know, isn't that kind of odd? He said, yeah, it is, because they only wear orange where there's aircraft. So I thought, yeah, that's pretty interesting. These gunpoint things happen a lot, particularly in Secret Canyon. I don't know, they were doing something in there, and what they would tell these people is there are military maneuvers going on back there, and it's off limits to you. And one guy said, well, this is public property, and this is a trail, and I'm going there. So they stuck these M16 in his face, and he said, you take one more step and we'll shoot. That's how serious these guys were. So he left, and I know this guy well. I heard the story firsthand. So there was something in Secret Canyon, and I'm convinced they used a hologram to cover it up, because the people that did go back there when there weren't any guards didn't see anything. So I think they were using a hologram to cover it up. And, you know, there was a forest ranger. He was 22 years old. I can't think of his name offhand. I wrote about him in the book. But he went in there. He never came out. He was 22 years old, an active forest ranger with the U.S. Forest Service. He went in there. He never came out. They never could find him. They never found a trace of him.
I remember that story. Dave Politis talked about it. So is there a base? Could it be just maneuvers or testing of some equipment, or is there a permanent facility out there somewhere?
Well, yeah, no, I think it has everything to do with extraterrestrials, because there was a guy, there was a lot of those gunpoint things happen, even out in the desert where it's flat. People ran into these guys with guns that stopped them and turned them back. So there was a case where the Forest Service put a man at the mouth of Secret Canyon to keep people out of there. His job was to turn hikers around, and they couldn't go into Secret Canyon. So they never told him why. And I investigated this pretty close, and it happened. I had some friends. I talked to some friends of his, and so he got sick of sitting out there turning hikers back. So he said, I want to go back there and find out what the hell's going on. So he went a short ways into Secret Canyon, and Secret Canyon has very steep walls. It gets a bit narrower and narrower. It goes in 6 miles long. So he came around a boulder and came face to face with a 9-foot extraterrestrial, basically a gray looking. But this one was nine. He said this one was 9 feet tall, but it was your standard gray. And so they stared at each other for a while. He turned around and left. So he went back to his supervisor. He said, I want you to tell me what the hell's going on back there. Because you told him what he saw. And so the guy disappeared after that. His friend said he just disappeared. I never saw him again. So,
well, I was asking about whether there might be a facility. And I was thinking about Skinwalker, because over the years, there has been an off again, on again interest in the military about what goes on there. If military folks would show up, they'd be on the perimeter of the ranch or in the basin. Helicopters would fly over. There were people asking questions. It was like they wanted their presence to be known. And it seemed like they were there to monitor what was going on as opposed to causing it themselves. And I don't know if you get the same sense from these guys who were there or not.
Well, you know, the thing of it was, there were cases where U.S. military was seen with extraterrestrials. And they also seemed to be doing something separately. So this seemed to be this thing in Secret Canyon. I don't know. It was not military. I've talked to high-ranking people in the military that know all about this stuff, and they said no way, because they knew the topography of the area in Secret Canyon. They said no way, not possible. It wasn't that. So, but they were willing to shoot people to keep them out of there. But what in the heck were they hiding? You know, in Secret Canyon was the most dramatic. But, you know, in my book, I've got a photograph of Secret Mountain on fire. Somebody set Secret Mountain, and it's a flat mesa. It's a big flat mesa, 2 or 3 miles long, about a mile wide. I've hiked all around it. And somebody set it on fire, and it burned. And it was, at the time, the world center for UFO activity. There was constant UFO activity up there. Some of the things I have seen over the years up there are just phenomenal. And I wrote about some of them in my book, particularly Emerging Dimensions. And so when Secret Mountain burned, it burned yellow in places. And forest fires never burn yellow, bright yellow. So there's a famous person who I won't name. He was a well-known speaker at the time. He did some research on it, and he found out that the fire departments were ordered by the government not to put the fire out on Secret Mountain. To let it burn all the way to the Colorado Plateau, and it did. And when I got to the Mogollon Rim or the Colorado Plateau, same thing, they put it out. But the entire top of Secret Mountain burned. So what burned up there? What was it? And after that, UFO activity on Secret Mountain, Secret Mountain ceased, and it has never restarted. You never see anything up there anymore. So something burned, something major burned, and I'm sure it had everything to do with Secret Canyon. So real quick, I had a friend who was a Apache, full-blooded Apache. He was up there about that same time, just before the fire, I think. He was at the very end of the trail, which ends above Secret Canyon. He ran into 6 guys with machine guns. They had masks on. They wouldn't let him see their faces. So they cut a big stick for him. He said, drag you the stick, cover your tracks all the way back. They pointed, I said, 100 yards. And this guy said, they wouldn't, I couldn't see their faces. They wouldn't show me their faces. So to me, that's extraterrestrial. So
Secret Mountain, Secret Canyon, they certainly are aptly named. You know, you mentioned about the U.S. Forest Service had people there to discourage hikers to turn them back around. Interesting that I wanted to ask you what became of the Bradshaw Ranch, and that's in the book, is that U.S. Forest Service ends up getting it, that Congress, well, you tell the story. How did it end up going from private hands into government hands?
Well, there's a printout in my book, in the New Emerging Dimensions, of the U.S. Congress had a special session to buy the Bradshaw Ranch. It's in the book. You can read it. And so they did. They bought it. They bought the Bradshaw Ranch, and then they put signs up around it. This is property of the United States government. Trespassers will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And So then the government owned it, but technically the government and the Forest Service the same thing. So the Forest Service owned it, and they had it for, they closed it for, I think, 6 years, 6 or 7 years, and now it's in ruins. The buildings, all the buildings on the Bradshaw Ranch are in ruins. The windows are smashed in, the doors are kicked in, the weeds are waist high. Now the University of Northern Arizona has it as a research station. It's been leased by the University of Northern Arizona, and they're doing research on native plants for the Bradshaw Ranch. And they've cultivated some areas, particularly in front of the ranch, where Linda and I did most of our research. It's all cultivated now. It's all cultivated as if they're going to plant something there. It's about an acre. So actually, at this point right now, as far as I know, the University of Northern Arizona has it. And the really interesting thing is they're going to tear the ranch house, all the ranch buildings down, and build a dormitory where the ranch buildings were, where the super paranormal stuff happens. So I've made jokes in my book about, oh boy, this is going to be really interesting what happens with these students in that dormitory right where the right
that
next
sounds,
to the portal. And,
that yeah. sounds like the theme for a slasher movie or something. Interesting that it's vital enough to the U.S. government that they have a special session of Congress to buy it. It gets put into the hands of the U.S. Forest Service, who does nothing with it, and then they, years later, transfer it to the state of Arizona so this university can use it. I'm kind of glad that the university has it, but I'd be careful if I were those students who are going to go out there to stay. I want to talk to you about some of the photos because they're amazing. In particular, the one that jumped out at me was the great big movie screen in the sky. In essence, this thing is up in the sky in the darkness, and an image appears that is like a drive-in movie screen. Tell me about that.
Well, I would leave the Bradshaw Ranch about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was always in a hurry because I was tired and hungry and all that stuff. And I used to have UFOs waiting for me on the road. And actually, the Travel Channel did a big reenactment about one of these times I ran into a UFO smack dab in the road. But at any rate, one night I was driving out, and this thing, it was like an old black and white TV screen in between channels. And it was maybe 30 feet across and 30 feet high, or a little bit bigger maybe. So I didn't take a picture of it. I had my camera put away, another time, actually seeing those, why black and white movie, TV screens, why? So Linda took that picture that's in my book, and it turns out, and we got accused of hoaxing this, some pretty serious stuff. That actually is a photograph of that one that was taken in Oregon, and now I can't remember. It's a famous one that was taken back in the 80s.
Well, it looks like the McMinnville photo, but McMinnville. It also reminded me of there's a guy named Heflin who took photos in either the late 50s or early 60s in Southern California, and there's a telephone pole in his photos, and it looks like the same craft. But I'll send that to you. I'll send the link to the Heflin photos to you.
Okay.
Well, but it wasn't hoaxed, right?
But Linda Bradshaw took it over the Bradshaw Ranch. This thing came on. Above it, we didn't know that it was photographed somewhere else. So we used it, and we passed it around, and cause we never kept anything. We'd get something, we'd pass it around. If you want it, you take it, do whatever you want. Want to with it as long as you give us credit. So we weren't out to make a fortune with this stuff. But that's what that is, and we got accused of hoaxing it, but it isn't. It was taken over the Bradshaw Ranch, but it's the same photograph, same thing.
And it's taken of a big screen that appeared in the sky. On the screen in the sky.
Yes.
You took some other photos, close-up photos. The one that really gets me is it's a guy's head, and it's right in front of where you were standing there with the camera.
Yeah, and the focal length of that camera is 2.5 feet, and that guy was underneath 2.5 feet. I didn't see him. I used the flash, and you can see the grass behind him. And this guy, I probably took him by surprise because you can see there's a hand coming up when he realized I was going to hit the flash button. There's a hand coming up I think, trying to cover his eyes. And he's got a strange bump on each side of his forehead and snow white hair. And I didn't see him, and he was right in front of me. You know, in a similar thing, I still feel bad about this. I think I hurt something badly. I went back into my van to reload my camera, and I knew I could feel something behind me. Something followed me. So I loaded the camera, and I put my thumb. I pressed the power up button, and I put my thumb over the red light, because we found out they could see those red lights. And when they see the red lights, they get out of our way. So we put black tape over the red light, and we took some of them by surprise. But at any rate, this time, I kind of held my breath a little bit and turned around real quick and hit the flash button on the way. So the camera went off right behind me, and about a foot in front of the camera, it looked like a daisy, exactly like a huge daisy, about 3 feet across. And the thing just melted. It literally melted. And I thought, oh no, I've hurt something really bad. And to this day, I feel bad about that, because I think I hurt something really bad, because it looked like it melted.
You took another photo of something, a person. It looks like a person, but with blue hair. You had pieces, different pieces in different photos of different body parts of what might be the same being, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the strangest things that ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch. Linda and I were standing side by side. You know, I've had medical doctors. I've had many, many people look at that. And so Linda took a picture, and this guy is right in front of Linda, and it's not me. I mean, it's absolutely not me. He has blue hair, and the ear is different. There's no hole in the ear. And the kind of one thing that impressed me was it has sideburns exactly like the first Star Trek crew, exactly that slanted, pointed sideburn, and it has an organ. I had a doctor look at that, and he said that's some kind of an organ in front of his ear. It looks like a big wart. But he said no. He says I think that's an organ. So after about 100 people. This has happened often to me. You know, 100 people look at something and they'll say, "Did you see this?" And I go, "No." So anyway, there was a Japanese film crew up there one night, and I was showing them that photograph. Actually, it's years later in Sedona, but at any rate, it was a Japanese film crew, and he said, "Did you see this? Look at his eye. You can't see his eye. A normal human that at that profile angle, the eye bulges out. You can't see this guy's eye at all." And I hadn't noticed that, but it's true. So it was. I think it's the only authentic photograph of a interdimensional being ever taken. I'll say that.
So what are we to make of this? That they were around you, but were basically invisible to the human eye. You could see them with a camera, but not with the human eye, and they were all around you.
Well, you know, we at times, Lynn and I felt like we were in Times Square in New York when that portal was really open, and we felt that they could see us, but we couldn't see them. And you know, we hobnobbed, we brushed shoulders with these things so long for 4 years. We think that some of what they are brushed off on us. I have some really strange psychic abilities and remote viewing abilities. Really,
We'll talk about that in the next segment. Tom Dongo, Merging Dimensions, is the name of the book. We've got a link where you can buy that. Coming up at the top of the hour, we are joined by animal welfare investigator, crusader, activist Chris DeRose. For now, we have Tom Dongo, author, co-author of Merging Dimensions, The Incredible Saga of the Bradshaw Ranch. And in a moment, our final segment with him, and we open up the phone lines with your calls and questions right after this on Coast to Coast. Tom, one thing that was not mentioned in the book, or if it was, I don't remember it, were animal mutilations. Did you have any of those in the vicinity of the ranch? Any of the classic cattle mutilations? No?
No.
You did have...
I've spent a lot of time researching that. There were some north, northern Arizona that were you could classify as a mutilation, cattle mutilation, typical cattle mutilation, but none in this area at all that I know of.
You had said that in the beginning of the interview that the activity had sort of dropped off, and now it looks like it's coming back. In the book, the new version of the book, there are some fairly recent incidents that you record and report. Any indications that it's anything close to what it was? And do you have any idea why it stopped? I mean, just the fire?
Well, you know, Chris O'Brien in the San Luis Valley in Colorado, we used to go back and forth. The stuff that was going on in the San Luis Valley around Crestone was as incredible as what was going on the Bradshaw Ranch, but a little bit different. But it stopped the same time that it did on the Bradshaw Ranch, and it was dormant for quite a while. I mean, I think it's picked up there again now from what I've heard, and the same with the Bradshaw Ranch. And this whole area has been, you know, there's been a phenomenal UFO activity lately, but it's a little bit different. I'm not actively out there anymore. I'm doing other things, but I do hear the stories. So it has, particularly on the Bradshaw Ranch, has seems to be starting up again.
But it's off limits now because it's the university property. So I imagine people sneak out there and go out there anyway, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I take a second to talk about the distribution of emerging dimensions, George?
Sure. Yeah.
Amazon now has plenty of books. They've gotten a big shipment, but they won't be set up to order the book until probably next Thursday. So if anybody wants a copy of the second edition of Emerging Dimensions, they need to wait until maybe Thursday or even Friday, and then you'll be able to get them from Amazon. And then lighttechnology.com has it for 35% discount. And now you can also go to my website, which is tomdongo.com, one word, Tom Dongo, and you can also get the 35% off offer on that through Light Technology. There's a link on my website that you can click on. So, yep.
Okay. Good. Fair enough. You know, it occurred to me as I was reading this, saw the date when the first edition came out, 1995. That's when the Sherman family was living on what is now known as Skinwalker Ranch. That's when it was really hitting the fan up there. And then NIDS came in and they were active for a couple of years, but it tailed off right at the end of the 90s. And, you know, there are some similarities in that time frame.
excuse me. It has a lot of similarities, but you know that the divergency of these things, you know, that went on like the Stardust Ranch, the Bradshaw Ranch, and the Skinwalker Ranch. It's just strange. Why, you know, excuse me. Why so different? It doesn't make any sense somehow. You know, and I've tried to figure out the activity that's gone on here in Sedona, and it's completely random. It's never. Systematic at all. It's always completely random. But so, and you know, I'm always going, why? What's up? You know, who's doing this and why?
Yeah, well, as in Utah, it's the same thing doesn't happen the same way ever or rarely, or it happens at a different spot clearly whatever it is, it's in control. You won't see it unless it wants you to see it, or at least it seems to call the shots. Let's take a couple of calls. We're going to start with Mark in Baltimore on the wild card line. Hi, Mark. You're on with Tom Dongo.
Taking my call, and this is a fascinating subject, and it's a pleasure to hear and speak with Mr. Dongo. I wanted to say that in 1992, I was still in art school, and this book came out by Ellen Crystal about these orbs, and I went up there. There was a photographic section in the middle of the book. So me and my girlfriend, we drove up there. We went right to that area where that sign was. It said Pine Bush. And we took our cameras, and we got out of the car, and we saw those orbs, and we took pictures of them, but nothing came out on the pictures. And it was like on a farm or something. And then I went into like this farm area, and I saw like a red dot in the sky, like a UFO, a red UFO. It just looked like a dot that was moving from east to west, and then it went into the trees and disappeared. And as I went further and further into that farm, I heard a bunch of dogs barking, so I came back to my car because I got scared. But the point is, those orbs are real. We saw them because I got that book by Ellen Crystal. So I don't know if Ellen Crystal and Linda Crystal are the same people or not, but maybe she used a different name for the book. But I have that book, and she has photographs of the orbs in that book, and we saw those up there, and we, like I said, we photoed them, but they didn't come out on the negatives, but we did see them. So they're real.
Mark, thanks. I'm going to let Tom comment on that. You had a lot of problems with photos that didn't come out, right, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Once in a while, we take a flash photo of something, and you can see it right in front of us, but it wouldn't show up on the camera. But, and Conversely, you take a flash picture and there's nothing there, and something incredible turned up on the photograph. And for instance, now this is, I knew sooner or later somebody was taking all these orb photographs around here, they'd get something. I was hoping they would get a creature, an extraterrestrial. But what happened was, and I was there, the woman got a photograph of a seahorse, a 4-foot perfect tall seahorse. Why a seahorse? But I said, could I have a copy of that photograph? Because I never got it. Usually in cases like that, I don't, because they think they're going to make $1 million off them. But it was a seahorse, a perfect seahorse. And it was red and white seahorse.
There's a photo in the book of the Japanese TV crew. They got an eyeful as well, didn't they?
Oh, the Japanese crew?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What a night that was. Yeah, that was when I was being interviewed almost constantly, almost weekly, by crews from all over the world, camera crews. So I got kind of bored with all this stuff. Maybe some other time I'll tell you another story that's really interesting about 11-person camera crew. But anyway, so the Japanese film crew was getting set up, and they were getting the lights and all that, and the chairs and the cameras set up. And so I sat down, and they were ready. They had the boom mics and the lights and everything, and the camera was on, and a UFO, a red and white UFO, blinked on right behind them. It was probably 30 feet long and 4 or 5 feet high, and it was red and white. It was red with white, what looked like portals. So I said, look what's behind us. So the cameraman spun around, and he got, I asked the producer, I said, did you guys get it? And he said, yeah, we got 3 full frame seconds. And the cameraman was shaking so bad, he was trying to speak in Japanese and English. And so the other guy said, in English, he said he's scared because he's never seen a UFO before. So they would never give me a copy of that. I said, you've got to give me a copy of that. And because they got it full frame on a $100,000 camera.
And so you don't even know if it, you don't know if it aired. Yep. If it aired in Japan, you don't know.
Well, I'm sure it did. They were going to air it in Tokyo. They were going to take it back. So I think it did. And I had a friend in the Mexican government try to get a copy of that, and he couldn't get it either. He didn't get anywhere.
We're going to Scotty in Oregon. Hi, Scotty. You're on with Tom Dungo.
Yeah. Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, nice to talk to you guys. Tom, I just want to cut to the chase here. I worked on the Mogollon Rim in one of those fire towers up there. I'm sure you're familiar with them. At the exact time you were talking about on your program, and from 1987 to, about 20 years. And I was worried. I don't want to give the name of the tower, but I was working right up there.
It was Turkey Butte, right?
Well, that was one of them, yeah. And I don't want to get too much personal information. But anyway, I probably met you if you hiked up the A.B. Young Trail
Sure.
Buffalo Creek. You ever hike up to that tower and meet the tower lookout guy up there?
I did.
Yeah, that was probably me.
Yeah.
If it was any time in the 90s, I was there for 20 years. Anyway, yeah. I can verify the things you've been talking about, Lost Forest Ranger, the Secret Mountain Fire. I spotted that fire. Okay.
You did.
I was the guy who spotted that fire. And, wow. But anyway, I'm not going to start telling stories, my Arizona stories. I could go on forever, man. I've met skinwalkers, whatever. I don't want to go and start sounding really whacked out, but I can verify the things you were talking about. And one thing that really grabbed me, I'll try to keep this really short, and I'm not going to tell a big story like a lot of callers do, but you were talking about sounds coming from underground, like there was a tunnel or something. You were talking about that?
Yes.
Right.
Are you there?
Yes. He was talking about that. Do you?
Yeah. Well, okay. Since you mentioned Turkey Butte, that's really close to Secret Mountain. A friend of mine was working out there, and I'd go visit. And anyway, we'd go hang out, and I would sleep out on the ground over by, it's right above Secret Mountain. And literally, I could not get to sleep because of vibrations coming up from the ground. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was unreal. It was really serious. And I went and I told my friend, who's the other ranger there, I told him about it. He's just like, oh man, you know, whatever, you know, he wasn't buying it. But, you know, so it happened once and I was just like, okay, whatever, you know, I'm not sure what it is. But I would go there, you know, we'd hang out Friday nights or whatever. And literally the cabins were small. So I would go sleep out, you know, throw out my sleeping bag. And I could not get to sleep because it was literally like a mechanical vibration coming up from the ground. It was so loud. It was loud. It was like a mechanical electric hum. And you're out in the middle of the wilderness. There's no wires. There's nothing out there. You know. Anyway, so that's just one point to verify. But anyway, I just wanted to contact you and let you know I was around that whole time. I was right, that whole search for that missing ranger and everything. I was aware of all that stuff.
Hey Scotty, if you wouldn't mind leaving contact info with Donna, I might like to reach out to you and just continue the conversation a bit, and maybe Tom would too, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you for calling and sharing the stories. We go to Sedona, Arizona. Blair calling in with a story. Hey Blair.
Hey George, on November 2006, around 10 p.m. Tom took me and four other people, including filmmaker David Sarita, out in the desert 15 miles west of Sedona looking towards Sycamore Canyon. And an aircraft carrier-sized bright lime green crescent moon-shaped object all of a sudden descended at about a 30-degree angle from the north to the south and silently crashed into Sycamore Canyon. And it left a horizontal lime green fog band within a few minutes. And then about 5 minutes later, speaking of Bell helicopters, we heard the sound of Bell helicopters approaching the area. Tom, do you remember that?
Vaguely. I was busy doing other things at the time, but I do remember that. That was a time when there was so much UFO activity going on. It was daily. It was hard to keep up with. So. Blair and I have known each other for 23 years. We met yesterday in Sedona. So good that you got in, Blair.
So did anybody take a photo? Anybody get a photo of a lime green UFO crescent moon shape, size of an aircraft carrier?
Well, it was happened within 5 seconds, George. It was just all of a sudden. It just came down at a speed that must have been a couple hundred miles an hour. From the north to the south, and like the thing, it looked like it could have been a holographic projection. It could have been a light thing because there was no sound, but it did manifest a fog in the west for seconds afterward. And then we hear the sound of, it could have been Huey or Black Hawk helicopters coming. So it probably, my guess was, it was one of ours. It was some kind of experiment that was my theory, but it hit us all of a sudden, George. Nobody had cameras ready to take a photo of it, and it was about 10 o'clock at night.
Understood. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us, Blair. Appreciate it. Try to get one more call in. Wes in Massachusetts. Hi, Wes. You're on with Tom Dongo.
How you doing?
All right.
Listen, I had a quick story. My dog had passed away, so I Googled this. A dog soul come back to the house. It said take pictures where the dog was. I got a couple of orbs, and I looked a little deeper into the picture, and there the dog was. So every night after that, I started videoing, you know, the house and see what was going on. It would start off with no orbs in the house, and then it got to the point where the whole kitchen was full of orbs. And like your guest says, these things are highly intelligent. Because I come out of the shower one night, and I said, if this is real, then touch me. And I had it videoed, and orb flew right up to my hand, touched my hand. I got a picture of it touching my pinky. And then a few nights later, I still videoed. I get up early because I'm a truck driver. And I caught this thing in the window. The head was glowing. I got four pictures of it. And then I was videoing at the same time. And in a split second, this thing just blinked off the glow in its head. And then it showed me in the video a silhouette of a head. Didn't look human. So what I did was a couple nights after that, I still was videoing and I was still snapping pictures. And like you said, you get these animals. I got this huge owl. Now you can just basically figure out the dimensions of a regular size window. And this thing looks like it takes up half the window, a little more than half the window. it looks like an owl to me looking in the window, just like that being was looking in the window. And I have this all videotaped and I have pictures. So basically what I did after that is I was watching Ancient Aliens one night, and there was a NASA astronaut on Ancient Aliens. So I looked him up, and this particular guy, I'm not going to say his name, but he owns a palm tree company. So I called it, and he wouldn't give me the time of day. Okay. When I called him, I asked him if he had a couple of minutes. I told him what I had. He mentioned to me that he gets all kinds of phone calls and emails of people saying they had.
Hey, Wes, we're going to have to wrap it up here. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your stories with us. Sounds pretty fascinating. I wish you had more time to listen to more of it. Tom, if somebody were to go to that area now and look around, even if they couldn't get on the Bradshaw Ranch, is it worthwhile? Can you? There's still public land out there that you could hike and watch the sky, right?
It is. It's worth a trip out there because anything could happen. Anything could happen out there, literally anytime.
And Sedona is a beautiful place. Whether you see UFOs or anything else, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, beautiful.
You've done it. You're done with the subject, or you're moving in a different direction?
No, I've got my fingers in a lot of pies now. One of the things I do is treasure hunting, and I can tell you some interesting stories about that. I combine my abilities, remote viewing and whatnot, with that, and dowsing.
And are they combined? I mean, is there a connection, treasure hunting, to some of these other pursuits? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you find a big pot of gold, let me know. We'll have you back.
All right. Well, George, thanks. It's been great fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, long overdue. I'll come see you. Tom Dongo, great to have you here. Appreciate it. The name of the book, again, Merging Dimensions, The Opening Portals of Sedona, The Incredible Saga of the Bradshaw Ranch. And again, we have links to how you can find that on our website. Up next, animal activist, crusader, Chris DeRose. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM.